because we announced in our agenda that the TMDL issue would not be heard before 11, we're going to take things a little bit out of order. But, Mr. Sato, before we get to you, I understand, is there anyone else here that wishes to address the board during our public comment period? Okay. You could do that now if you want. Mr. Collins? Because we took some people earlier during public comment, and then we let them go so they didn't have to wait. And if you want to address this now, you could do so. Otherwise, public comment, we're going to have it again after lunch. So if you're here.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have a speaker card? Okay. Maybe you could go ahead and address this and then maybe fill out a card and hand it in afterward. Go ahead.
Thank you, Jeff. I came down today primarily to address you on public comment. You had this permit earlier, the timber harvest review permit, and I chose not to waste the time by pulling it off the agenda because that program had been reduced to a sort of a perfunctory shell that doesn't really have any consequence for the management of timber or, you know, the compliance with the sediment TMDL in the San Lorenzo. And the reason I wanted to address this is because there were some pretty stark observations I made this winter. Finally, after 3 years of continuous drought, we've had so far a fairly normal winter. Up where I live, there's been about 46 inches of rain. And when that happens, the average long-term annual average is about 50 inches where I live. When it rains about average, there are torrents of soil that flow out of private roads and construction sites and people's home sites, timber harvest plants, everywhere. These torrents are immense. I drive through slushing piles of dirt when I leave my house and drive towards Santa Cruz. I live about 13 miles from Santa Cruz in the upper San Lorenzo River watershed. And what's striking to me is county employees will sometimes see these torrents of soil, and because I live in this particular area, they'll point them out to me as though I have some way of dealing with them. I can look at my neighbor's property or look at the road systems around me and see these problems, but, of course, I have no authority to do anything about it. And this board presumably has that authority, but there is no presence from the regional board on this issue. And I want you to understand the scale of this. Your own TMDL says there's 100, the long-term average sediment discharge from the San Lorenzo is 136,000 tons per year. And that's from, a watershed of about 180 square miles. I've read hydrology documents in the past that break that down to somewhere between 3 and 10 tons per square mile per year. And the TMDL will never be met without some response to all this discharge. It's extremely episodic. Like I say, this happened now in a period of 2 weeks after in a four-year span. And during that time, suddenly we'll get a fairly substantial series of storms and, you know, everything rips loose. And I don't think people who don't live in these areas understand how this works. The timber harvest thing is part of it, but the entire scope of it is huge, and it's really not being touched. And I just wanted to point that out to you. Thank you.
Have you taken any photographs of what you've seen? Because that is the best documentation for the rest of us to be able to visualize what's going on. Because you're right, we don't live in the area, and we only learn about this when someone describes it.
Well, the aftermath of it is still lying about in mushy piles here and there all over the place up there. It's no secret to anyone who lives there.
I know, you know, that As you know, the challenge we have is that in this whole watershed, there's a natural high rate of erosion going on.
Certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. Very steep canyons, lots of erosion. So there's going to be a big component anyway that's natural. And that's not to say that there aren't things that are supposed to be happening. Do we have a San Lorenzo TMDL for sediment? We do.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't have the details on this at the tip of my head, and I don't know if you have more information, Chris, but we do have a roads project inventory and actual physical improvements of roads with the Santa Cruz RCD, Karen Christensen's outfit.
Certainly. They assisted my road association a few years ago with a grant, but the scale of that program compared to the extent of this is minuscule, really, practically speaking. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is there are no sanctions or regulatory consequences whatsoever for any of the private landowners in these circumstances. So they really have no impulse to correct problems unless they personally are concerned about it. And in my experience, that is a fairly small percentage of the population. So, you know, this problem is not going to be dealt with until it's addressed in some sort of more systematic way, because, you know, the RCD is not going to be, the RCD roads program, they never once came back to my road to see if we were even maintaining it after we spent all that money. Not once. They're terrified to be involved in any kind of activity that implies that they expect compliance. We spent a great deal of time documenting the project, and the man I worked with on my road association collected reams of photographs, but they were never asked for after we submitted them at the initial time. No one ever came back to see if the program was the next year or two to see if the road system was being maintained. So,
Mr. Briggs, we can't really get into this right now, but yeah, is there something that we could do in terms of getting a status on the EMDL for the San Lorenzo, just to see where we're at with that program?
Chris, I was thinking that we'd actually talked about bringing a summary of the roads program, and what about the TMDL status? Did we have a status report coming up on that? Sure, yeah, come on up.
Hi, I'm Christopher Rose, TMDL program manager at the board. And as Mr. Briggs mentioned, there is this program with the RCD, and there is some funding. We didn't put it on our work plan for next year to address that TMDL. Every 3 or 4 years, we do a progress report to see how TMDLs are being achieved and how they're going, essentially. And we could do that next year. This past year, we had a couple that were on our work plan in order to do progress reports to see how implementation was going, but then of course with the furloughs we had to drop some tasks, and mm-hmm. those were the tasks that got dropped essentially last year.
I think, Chris, what we'd like to see then would be kind of a status on the entire TMDL, not just a component,
right?
Not just the roads component, but the entire TMDL for the San Lorenzo
sure.
sediment TMDL. When would staff be able to put something together for the board?
Probably mid-fiscal year, perhaps. Would that be okay? December.
Mid-fiscal year, meaning the end of this calendar.
I'm sorry. The end of this calendar, say for the December board meeting. I mean, just off the top.
That would be fine. Yeah.
It makes sense to have that at a northern.
Well,
meeting.
But do we have one?
Did we just say that it was going to be?
We have one in December.
Where is that at?
Watsonville.
Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah. And typically it would be about that time of year that we give the board an update about our activities anyway, so we could just include that in our, you know, in the TMDL status report.
And just put this in the back of your mind, and I'll work with Roger on this. Perhaps we could set this up with some kind of a site visit or two for those board members that have not been up into the area at all. I know that Mr. O'Malley has not been. Mr. Hodgen lives there, so I think that he knows the area
well.
He can
meet at his house.
Yeah. and has Dr. Hunter, did she come with us when we did the first
I don't think so.
Field trip, so to speak?
I don't recall.
We did that a number of years ago.
Right.
Where we visited a couple or two or three harvest plans. So I'd like to think about that also. Perhaps the board could look at some of these problem areas and the challenges that the region is facing.
Right. Well, the timing is quite good. We're working on our work plan for next year for the TMDL program. We can put it in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to address this right now on public comment? All right. Okay. Come forward. Not yet. What we're doing, ma'am, is anyone who wishes to address the board on any item not on the agenda. If there's an item on the agenda, there's a time slot for you to talk to us. Okay.
Hello, I'm Kay Mercer with the Central Coast Ag Water Quality Coalition, and I thought the public comment would be at the end, so I'm not quite organized, but I did submit a letter to the board I did want to address the issue of technical capacity relative to the proposed conditional ag waiver, and the letter basically talks about the fact that the coalition is in an alliance with the Ag Water Quality Alliance, and we are involved with the UC Cooperative Extension, the RCDs, NRCS, and the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And as a result, we're very well aware of the fact that in the public sector, we really do not have the technical capacity to address the proposed conditional ag waiver as it exists. And what I've been asked to do by AQUA is actually submit a request for qualifications in the private sector to do some sort of baseline assessment, because at this point in time, we really don't think that the private sector can take up any of the slack. So I did provide you with an example in my letter. The coalition was involved with the UC Cooperative Extension through a grant from the Santa Clara Valley Water District to work with 10 growers on irrigation efficiency and distribution uniformity, exactly what's being asked to be done in the conditional ag waiver. 10 growers. It took a watershed coordinator, an intern, a UC Cooperative Extension farm advisor, and his technician a full growing season to work with 10 growers, and we still did not meet the objectives of 85% irrigation efficiency and distribution uniformity. So 10 growers, 4 technicians, and the regional board staff is proposing that we work with 2,500 growers and do the same thing in 2 years. So I just wanted to make a comment that the proposal as it stands is impossible. It cannot be done with the technical capacity that we have. It needs to be acknowledged that the budget cuts have decimated the RCDs. They're all working with skeleton staff. UC Cooperative Extension is in total disarray because of furloughs and budget cuts. Our own organization, we have not successfully gone after a grant for over a year because the attitudes of the regional board staff have so poisoned the atmosphere that we can't even get growers to participate and cooperate to write grants, let alone get them. So our own mission, based upon this this proposal, at this point in time, it's nullified because our mission is proactive, grower-driven, cost-effective, voluntary water quality improvements based upon education, outreach, coordination, facilitation, and innovation. And when you start mandating these things to the level that staff have tried to mandate it, I'm not sure our organization will survive. Thank you.
Okay. They're being proposed.
I know.
Okay. I mean, and so it strikes me as very unfortunate that, you know, people are reacting this way, that because staff has put something out there that they don't like, that it's like they're going to pull everything back and they're not going to participate. I've tried to communicate to the community that the board is not the staff. that there's a set of eyes and ears up here that are going to make final decisions on what this is going to look like. And so I don't know how much more I can do at this point, but to, you know, let people know that you have to work through this process. This is the process we have. Staff always comes out with a proposed order, and it gets worked.
Well, I guess I'm confused. I've been, on one hand, been told to provide board with input, and that's what I'm trying to do, is
you
to
are.
Make you aware that there is this these technical capacity issues. And our reaction is not just to the proposed waiver. It's to the everything that preceded the proposed waiver in combination with the
right.
waiver.
No, I understand you're
okay.
the communicator of all this, and
okay.
I'm trying to communicate back to
okay.
you that we can't, you know, staff does a lot that goes on routinely, day to day, that we're not, you know, aware of. That's just how the organization operates. So things have gone under the bridge, and that's where they go, and we can't undo all those things. If people
mm-hmm.
have a reaction
mm-hmm.
to what staff has done, they're going to have to put that aside and try to participate. And I'm specifically referring to trying to get grants to do things.
Mm-hmm.
You alluded to the fact that they're disappointed, they don't want to participate, they feel, I'll use the word burned,
mm-hmm.
by what's happened, and we got to get past the egos
well,
that
it's
are
actually,
injected in this so that we can try to make headway.
I think it's actually distrust of how the data will be used, and so growers are afraid to participate in and produce any data. That's really the crux of the matter.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I acknowledge, you know, their concern about that.
Okay. But that's just one aspect. I mean, that has had a direct impact on the coalition. It has an impact on our partners as well.
I mean, you know, so far we've had one enforcement item that I'm aware of in 6 years, you know, against any ag permittee. I think there was the strawberry.
Well, there was a group of five that are essentially the same.
Okay.
As far as administrative civil liability.
You look at the totality of how many there are. I mean, staff hasn't been any enforcement whatsoever.
But that's not what they've alluded to, how they're going to react in the future. I mean, I think that the growers are worried about participating in grants and making themselves vulnerable to two things, vulnerable to enforcement.
Can I just interrupt for a second?
Yes.
This is a public forum. This
not
item
a debate.
Is a pending matter, and it's really not appropriate to be debating the issues at this point. There's going to be a public workshop in May 12th, and as well as opportunity to submit written comments. But at the public workshop, this would be the perfect opportunity to address these issues where the board, in a noticed matter, can respond and have the debate, you know, if appropriate. But today, that's not the time for that. But you've got the opportunity to at least bring it to the attention, your concerns, and they will be, you know, the staff will knows those and will have that information. So.
Well, thank you.
I don't
was
want to
afraid
stop
that
you
this
from,
issue would yeah. be lost in the shuffle of discussion of monitoring and the proposal itself, and I just wanted to make sure that I brought it before the board.
Well, I appreciate that, and your letter I read, too,
yep.
so it's been brought to our attention, and, you know, go over it again at the workshop.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right. Rand, does this happen to you when you chair meetings?
Got another card here.
All right. One more speaker.
Thank you. My name is Marty Johnson, and I represent the six resource conservation districts that participate in the Ag Water Quality Alliance with the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Kay Mercer asked me to come today and just comment on the shifted technical capacity of the resource conservation districts. Just to, I guess, provide background information on how our situation has changed because of the economic climate and the bond freeze that happened in December of 2008. So just I'm providing an overview of how our technical capacity to provide ag water quality technical assistance has shifted. Probably our largest RCD that was providing ag water quality technical assistance was RCD of Monterey County in Region 3. which was operating in 2006 with a staff of 8 full-time equivalent people and a $1 million budget, almost all of which was for ag water quality assistance. Before the bond freeze, that had been reduced to 5, and today there is only one full-time equivalent employee there with a budget of $60,000 for ag water quality. In our city of Santa Cruz County, which is the other major RCD in the region that I work with Aqua, two of their 3.5 ag water quality people are gone, including the person who headed all of those programs, who's reduced to 10 hours a week. The executive directors at Kachuma and Upper Salinas Las Tablas RCD are both gone now because of economic difficulties. The ag water quality program at the San Mateo County RCD no longer exists. The only staff person at San Benito RCD is no longer there. And the remaining RCD, Loma Prieta, doesn't have an ag water quality program at all. In the past, our programs were really broad. They focused on seeding roads on farms in the winter, planting in the furrows, providing cover crops, working on sediment basins and other structural engineered projects. And basically at this point, the capacity to do that is almost gone. And so I guess I just wanted to provide that background, since RCDs have been major partners working with farmers one-on-one to provide those services. And our landscape has just drastically changed because of economic difficulties with the bond freeze. And also, it is true that our capacity to recruit growers to work on ag water quality projects has dramatically shifted because of how the ag waiver order conversation has happened. And it's true that that conversation is in process, but we are certainly finding it more difficult to get growers to partner with us. So thank you.
And could you go over with us again, where does your funding come from?
My funding comes from a congressional earmark that supports the implementation of Ag Plan 4, which is the Agricultural Water and Rural Lands Plan of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary.
So it's all federal money?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other? Does anyone else wish to address the board during public comment? I think you did, didn't you, Mr. Shemek?
No, that was
okay. Go ahead, ma'am.
Darlene Dinn. I'm an agricultural land use consultant, and I work with growers and ranchers in multiple counties, and I wanted to speak to the issue on technical capacity and a couple important aspects on the grant funding and bring it to your board's attention. There, part of the capacity issue is when you apply for grants and when you work in a collaborative basis with growers is who the grantee is and the relationship. And while it's appreciative that you are administering grants and you do have some financial capacity, the fact that we're now a regulated class under this body and other bodies as it relates to ag water quality, you have a responsibility on behalf of the public to look at water quality issues, and for you to be the granting agency or any other regulatory body to be the granting agency, and then to attempt to work in collaboration on projects in order to do proactive solutions. If those solutions don't work, the assumption by the growers is that you'll then have an obligation to enforce on them on when they came forward to be proactive to do something of great public benefit. It's better to have an arm length transaction so that they're able to do some trial bases, work with the research facility, research capacity, such as UC Davis and others, so that they can provide important pilot projects and technical for you to be the enforcer, the granting body, the participatory, the management, and the whole aspect puts them in a real quandary. And I would really ask that you consider that role and how important that is, and also that being another party of you being required to provide the public with information which can result in third-party litigation, and I think that's relevant to the growers and how they work forward. And so as we move forward into these grant opportunities in different aspects, you know, a cooperative approach would be maybe a different way of looking at how granting agencies are done, and we don't have the technical capacity that we used to have with the NRCS and the RCDs that did provide that bridge. So I appreciate your time, and I do understand that this will, that some of this will be at the later workshop, but with all the other aspects of going, I do believe that this is an important issue and probably will get lost in the and the amount of paperwork that you'll receive from the agricultural community. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Shimmick.
I'm sorry to take up your time. I wasn't planning on speaking on this topic. My name is Steve Shimmick, Monterey Coast Keeper, and I know that we will have plenty of opportunity to talk about the ag waiver in the future. I do want to point out that all the comments on public forum, it underscores the fact that word has gotten out. There are some people that have commented about the lack of process on this issue, and obviously the enthusiasm that people comment and the depth of their knowledge indicates the fact that, that the process has been great, in fact. The ag panel met for over a year, and the work of that panel has to be recognized, and the fact that it was our job to outreach to our various constituents. So there has been a tremendous amount of process here, and I hope we all recognize that. And there will be process to come and plenty of more opportunities to comment. It's been a great process. I do want to point out that there are some shifting kind of baselines, shifting ideas here. During the ag panel, it was said over and over and over again that growers did not want anyone to prescribe BMPs to them. In other words, that just was totally inappropriate. So now what we have is people coming forward and saying, well, the ability to offer technical assistance has been impacted, you know, to help tell growers BMPs, you know, and best management practices. That was exactly the opposite that we actually heard during the ag panel process. So there's been a shifting of point of view. And I don't know how you're going to work through that, but please understand that we heard something very different during the ag panel process. The way around this is to have very good numeric standards that simply people must meet. And then I'm kind of a free market kind of guy. I believe that if there are strong numeric standards, a strong regulatory framework, people will find a way to learn to do what they need to do. And I hope that that's the process that, that you guys follow. I know that staff has been meeting with various groups, and the process continues. It's been a great process. Thank you for leading such a wonderful process for the ag waiver. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, I think that concludes the speaker cards we have right now.
Okay.
So it's 5 of 11.